This is On the Other Hand. A podcast that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas, and Braver Angels is part of a national organization that aims to reduce political polarization by promoting honest but respectful dialogue among people of all political beliefs. We believe our progress as a community and country happens when we actively seek common ground with the other side so that problem solving can occur. Hello and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, April Chatham Carpenter, and I'm here today with my co-host, Glenn White. Get ready for today's conversation, which is a two-part conversation with a community leader in Arkansas. And this conversation, we're going to see how another community leader is helping us work together toward solutions in Arkansas. So, Glenn, who's visiting with us today in this first of two-part conversation?
April, we have Gwen Falkenberry from Ozark, Arkansas. We're very happy to have her here. Many of you may already know a little bit about Gwen if you've read her weekly columns in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Others know her as a teacher or as an author of several books. And some of you may even recall having heard about her run unsuccessfully for the Arkansas legislature. She ran as a Democrat, but apparently she has several views that don't typically associate themselves with the Democratic Party. So I would imagine that's going to be part of our discussion today. So we look forward to learning more from Gwen and how she navigates our political landscape, how she's worked in particular to bring people of differing political views together. So Gwen, welcome to On the Other Hand.
Thanks for having me.
We're really happy that you're here. We really appreciate you joining us. Let's start by having you tell us a little bit about yourself. I know from what I've heard so far, there must be a lot to include, so we don't have time for everything, but just take a while to tell us who you are, a little bit about your work as an educator and an author, and just generally what makes you tick.
Well, thank you again for having me. I'm honored to be on your podcast. My name's Gwen Ford Falkenberry, and I'm from Ozark, Arkansas. I've lived there my whole life. My family actually goes back 9 generations there. My parents are both teachers, and I have one brother who is younger than me, and he's now the superintendent of schools in Ozark. So I grew up there and graduated from Ozark High School, went to UCA, where I met my husband and got my bachelor's degree in education with English emphasis. I double majored in English and biology. And then I did a little stint at law school at the U of A in Fayetteville. I finished my first year, clerked for a prosecuting attorney that summer in Rogers, and decided that was really not for me. So I worked as a teacher for a little while at Gentry High School, where my husband was coaching. And then I worked as a writer for Day Spring Cards before eventually going back to Arkansas Tech University and getting my master's in liberal arts. And that's really where my first book came from. I did my first novel as a creative project that was kind of the equivalent of my master's thesis. And I was a stay-home mom for about 10 years, and I wrote several books during that time when my kids were asleep late into the night, and then I started teaching English at Arkansas Tech University Ozark campus. The university merged with a small VOTEC that was located in Ozark, and it was just a sweet spot for me because I never imagined I'd be able to teach college there in my hometown. And so now I've been there about 12 years. And like you mentioned, I guess it was October-ish of 2019, I got a Facebook message from a local person, local Democrat, that said, you know, our representative is not running. We had a Republican representative who everybody loved, Sarah Capp, and she's not running. She was going on to be a judge, and we'd like somebody, you know, a hometown person to run and represent us. And I thought it was a joke at first. I'd never had any political ambitions. And a lot of my work, you know, or just service as a person had been just community service. And that's kind of a family tradition, motivated by our faith. You know, my parents, my grandparents, we've all, you know, been in some kind of public service, teaching, or my grandmother was the director of social services in Franklin County for a long time. And just, you know, trying to make a difference in your small sphere of influence is kind of the way that we've operated. And I never imagined myself as a politician. I'm not a real good small talker. I tend to be just, I don't know how else to say this, but kind of unable to not be my just self, you know. And so I'm not good at playing, you know, a game that could, you know, make me popular or win votes.
So you might actually say something you really mean, that even if it's not helpful in your
exactly
political...
And I might even regret it later, but I just can't help myself, you know. So I mean, as a writer and an educator, I know how to, you know, speak and communicate with people. I'm not saying, you know, that I just completely raw, you know, person, but as far as, I guess, just the politics that we've gotten so used to, where you just have to guess what people mean and who's paying them to say what, and right. and such a culture of, you know, where anything that is said can be misinterpreted or misrepresented. I am just not a person fit for that kind of environment, as far as being good at navigating it.
You're not really into the calculating you say things.
No, I've never been interested in that. It's not a game I want to learn how to play. And so, like I said, I really thought it was a joke. And I wrote back, you know, thank you. This is very nice of you to think of me, but there's no way I could do this. I'm not a politician. And the interesting answer that came back was, that's why we want you. And bless their hearts, I think that as local people, friends, you know, former students, after I investigated this, I found out, you know, who was kind of in cahoots to ask me to do this. And it was a former student who sparked the idea. I think we were all maybe, well, I can say for me, for sure, just kind of naive about how serious the division was. I think the perception of, you know, the people recruiting me was that, you know, I was just really a normal person in our district. And I did, and, you know, have a good reputation and was very involved in the community and my family, you know, same way. And, church goers, you know, my husband is a football coach there. My son at the time was kind of a standout quarterback for the Ozark Hillbillies. My daughter had just graduated as a National Merit Scholar, you know. And so I think, you know, after sort of unraveling some of this the last 2 years, that the perception of the Democratic Party and people, you know, supporting me and recruiting me was, this is the kind of Democrat who could win, you know.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I just completely bought in, you know, once I decided to do it, I just was all in. And this is maybe one of those rabbit trails that you'll want to edit out. I don't know. But the way I decided, well, after they said that, after they came back and said, well, you know, that's why we want you. That was just really, I don't know, poignant to me. And I went home and I talked to my husband. I figured that he would, like, you know, talk me out of it and say, oh my gosh, you know, we're too busy. We have four kids, you know, full-time jobs, a farm, church responsibilities, you know, you're a writer, please don't do this. but he didn't. He said, well, Gwen, you know, if you have somebody on your doorstep saying, you know, help us, or what you are is what we want, what we need, you know, to help here, you have to at least give that, you know, some serious consideration. And so we prayed about it. We talked to our kids about it. And, you know, something my kids said just was another kind of one of those moments where you're, you know, you kind of have these mile markers, I guess, along the way. I can't remember actually which kid said this, but it was kind of their whole collective attitude was, you know, well, Mom, you know, teach us to stand up for what we believe and to, you know, to answer the call and to, you know, to be people who are involved trying to make things better. And, you know, I just don't, this seems like your chance to do that. And it really was like one of those moments where you think, this is where the rubber meets the road, right? Like, I need to practice what I preach to my kids and to my students every day. You know, I'm always trying to get them engaged and to, you know, do their part and to reach out. And it just seemed like, you know, if I'm going to teach my kids and my students that all day long, every day, then I can't say no to this. And sure. So that was the moment, I guess, when I just thought, okay, I'm going for this. But, you know, Glenn, this is going to sound just delusional now. Like, it makes me laugh to think about it. But I never imagined that it was not possible to win. Like, I knew that it would be challenging. You know, I didn't assume that I just had it made in the shade or anything. But I just felt like if I work hard and I just really put myself out there, I can do this. I can win this.
Well, then, I appreciate that. Let's get into that some more in a little bit. Right now, this maybe is a good time to think about telling the listeners about, I mean, obviously you ran as a Democrat, but tell us a bit about your political leanings overall, because I gather they're a little bit complicated. Now, as you may know, in Braver Angels, we talk in terms of colors. You know, red is leaning conservative, blue leaning liberal, purple kind of a mixture or other. So if you could tell us a little bit about your overall political leanings. And in particular, what would be helpful is, what are the values that led you to adopt those particular political leanings, especially if you have some stories like you're already telling us that'll help us understand that. That would be helpful.
Okay. Well, we have this saying in Ozark, you know, my husband's football coach, and we're the Ozark Hillbillies, and we say we bleed purple and gold. And that's actually a pretty good way, I think, to characterize my politics. You know, this is another thing that I've been defining more clearly over the past few years, because I mostly have just voted on my instinct of who represented, you know, what I believed, you know, the most, or who I thought was a trustworthy person. I've never paid much attention to party. Of course, you know, historically, I mentioned my granny, who was the director of social services for 20 years, but this was back, you know, in the 60s, 70s, 80s. She was involved with Dale Bumper's campaign. He is, you know, was governor and then a U.S. senator, and he's from Charleston, which is just right across the river from Ozark, and we share a county seat. And my parents, actually, when I was born, they were teaching in Charleston. And anyway, my grandmother was good friends with Maggie Schaefer, who is a sister of Betty Bumper's. And so I guess that's kind of how she got involved. But I think I got a lot of my values and my sense of what is, you know, appropriate and right and wrong and what politics is for from those roots. I was a baby when Dale Bumpers was elected to as governor. And so, you know, I met him a few times, but I never knew him real personally. But he was, because of that connection, he was kind of my idea of what a politician is and should be. And, you know, he was a true public servant. And that, you know, everybody we all knew wasn't perfect or anything, but that was who we sort of looked to as our model of a politician. And so going back now to this moment when I'm asked to run as a Democrat, for me, again, this is just one of those things I just think I was so stupid, but I did not think it mattered that much. You know, if Republicans had approached me and asked me to run, and it would have been this a similar, you know, scenario where they said, we want you because you're not a politician. And, you know, I probably would have said yes the same way. In fact, after I said yes to Democrats, there were some Republicans who approached me. Oh my goodness, we had no idea, you know, that you would do this. And I remember talking that over with my family. And because, you know, by this time people were saying you'd have a lot better chance if you would run as a Republican. And my dad said, there's no way. You have to go to the dance with the one who, or you have to dance with the one who brought you, right? And so it was, you know, at that point, I was all in with these, you know, precious, wonderful people who had invited me to the table. But it wasn't because I identified myself with the Democratic platform. It was because these were people who recognized potential in me and wanted to get behind me to represent our district. And so I guess the long answer to your question is I think I'm just about as purple as a person could get, because I still look at things that same way. There are things about the Democratic platform that I love and things that I'm not comfortable with. And then there are things about the Republican platform, really mostly the idea of limited government, and, you know, the idea that we're, you know, fiscally conservative, and that I really appreciate too. And so at the time, I just thought, well, it doesn't really matter what kind of label I have, you know, I'm going to be the same person one way or the other. Probably if it would have been my idea, I would have run as an independent, but it wasn't my idea. I never dreamed of doing it. So I don't know if you want me to get into any specifics of that, but I definitely still do not, one of the things I wish in this country is that the party lines were not so strict.
Yeah,
I don't want to say I would do away with parties. I don't know exactly what that kind of system would look like, but I do. I just wish that people had less of a fidelity to party and more of a engagement with principle and what is best for people. And that may not be the exact same thing everywhere. And, you know, and one of the things I'm really focused on right now is what's good for rural people is not necessarily the same thing that urban people need in every way.
Right.
You know,
right.
Schools is one way that I see that. And so to me, it shouldn't be all those things dictated by a party platform. It should be what do the people in this place really need?
Yeah, that reminds me of something that I've heard from one of my red counterparts in the organization about the value of doing politics at the local level, mm-hmm. where they know more about what's needed at that time. So that's an interesting point. We may get into some more details on that, but I know April has a couple of things in mind for you as well.
Hi, Gwen. It's been great to hear a little bit about your own thoughts. It could resonate so much with many of the things that you said. I know that you've started an organization now called Arkansas Strong, and I'd like for you to tell the listeners how your organization works or the vision of it to help bridge the political and ideological divide.
Well, I don't want to take credit for starting it because the person who started it is a group of, well, the person who started it, her name is Jenny Diaz, and she's my director. And then we also have a board, and it's a nonpartisan organization. And the way that I got into it is after I lost my election, here I was, you know, kind of had gone from being this just locally focused, you know, busy mom, writer, teacher to this person who's like hyper engaged with politics. You know, it felt like I'd had just, you know, a crash course, a master's degree course learning about Arkansas politics the whole year that I was campaigning. And all of a sudden I had nowhere to go with it. You know, all these things I was going to do in the government, in the legislature. And then it was just like a hot potato. And actually, it was a really hard time for me kind of figuring out what the next step was. But I had met Jenny through you know, my campaign. And I called her up and said, you know, I'm looking for an outlet and kind of a way to do some of the work that I wanted to do as a legislator. And do you know of anything? And she said, well, as a matter of fact, I do. You know, she had been involved in kind of starting this organization, but she works with some other nonprofit groups too, and she just hadn't really been able to do with Arkansas Strong much of it, you know, what she wanted, or it was just kind of like a baby that, or just like a seed that had been planted, but she needed someone to come alongside and develop it. And so that's really what I did. She just kind of gave me this freedom to develop it, and that's what we've done. So we really focus on two things, and one is just sort of celebrating stories and people, just everyday good things going on in Arkansas, to try to sort of amplify voices that maybe don't get heard in other places. And also just to be seeking out those helpers, you know, those stories and those people in our state who are doing the work, you know, that nobody sees necessarily. So that is a big part of what we do. The other part is to just connect the dots, to try to connect the dots between Little Rock and what happens here in the legislature and the voters at home. So that was one thing that I really learned in my race, was that, you know, I wanted to talk about public schools and, you know, what rural schools needed and from our leaders, and how some of our leaders were, you know, doing things that were detrimental to rural schools. And what I learned was that I could never get past the label of Democrat, and the perception that I was for abortion and might take away guns. I could never even get to the conversation of what was actually affecting us locally. And I think this is just my personal opinion, but I think what I saw there was that, you know, everyday working people vote for leaders. They vote for a party that they think represents their values. And then they just sort of vote, and then they trust those people to go down to Little Rock and take care of them, you know, and to represent our needs and to stand up for us and to help us. And they don't see that some of those same legislators that we vote in, not all of them, but many of them from rural areas, you know, are so influenced by corporate interest and funded, that once they get here, they don't represent the people who put them in office. And we have, you know, some legislators in my rural area who will just, for instance, every single time vote against the interest of rural public schools. It makes no sense, you know, at all. It's easy to see that the only reason anyone representing a rural district would do that is because they're beholden, you know, to vote that way, and it's not to the people. And so to try to get that word out and let people know, look, you're trusting these people, but they're betraying your trust. They are not worthy of that trust. And, you know, I really found that out in a very personal way when I asked to speak to the education committee in the legislature, and it was on a matter about expanding vouchers for private schools here in Arkansas. And, you know, I went in to speak, and I sat down and I said, I'm a teacher, you know, and I need to talk to you about our perspective, you know, and we really need your help with this. And I actually had legislators on that committee turn away from me and like hold their phones up and read, or just look at the wall or look at each other. They absolutely did not give me the time of day. And I was not the only one. There was a superintendent from Springdale, a very accomplished, good person, and they treated him the same way, actually worse. They implied that he was in this business for some kind of personal gain. And, you know, it was just absolutely ridiculous. It was, that was really the ugly side there that you see at this sort of, you know, getting elected as an entitlement to do what it, you know, whatever, and not have any accountability to your people. That's so wrong and so discouraging. And I cannot believe that if normal everyday voting people realized that they would keep electing these people. And so one of the things we do at Arkansas Strong, like I said, we're completely nonpartisan, and But we try to just get information out there so that people can, you know, it's hard to wade through all the information. You know, the meetings and the votes and the individual, how, you know, bills are passed or not. And I realized that as a person, you know, with a master's degree, trying to learn this stuff, just, yes, it's, you know, it's published on a government website, but you have to dig through, you know, you have to be super interested to go in and dig that information out. And I just think, you know, had I not been running for office, I wouldn't have had the time or wherewithal to pursue all that. And so we try to make that a little easier for people just to get the information they want and, you know, and just be informed. So,
So it sounds like the, you know, being able to get the stories out there of the everyday person is so important because as I've been hearing you talk, it seems like sometimes the people in the political legislature might not be still in touch with what's going on at that level, or not in the way that the everyday person might think that they are. So I think that's interesting.
And it's certainly not all of them. You know, I want to make sure I make that point. Even like on that education committee, there were some wonderful people who were engaged and, you know, listening and cared. But just the audacity of some, where it was heartbreaking, really. That was a heartbreaking moment for me to realize the state of things.
It sounds rude and disrespectful, which is not what most Arkansans were raised to be like.
No. And it was just it was this disrespect, and it was just this, you know, what you are saying and what you represent is either just completely unimportant, like irrelevant to me, or I know that I'm not going to agree with it, or it's going to, you know, it's not going to change the way I vote. And so I do not have the time. I mean, I just am not even going to listen to you, you know. And I think, you know, the heartbreak of that and is something that really sort of fueled my mission, my work even further is, you know, in that moment, I felt so humiliated, like demoralized and dishonored. And I'm a pretty, you know, self-confident person, a pretty strong personality, and, you know, have significant resources and help behind me, not only, you know, like my family network, but, you know, support and in my own, you know, good job and education. And I just imagined, like, you know, someone else maybe who doesn't have those privileges trying to connect or to come and, you know, ask their legislature for something or try to communicate what they need. And how even with my sort of orneriness and boldness and, you know, tenacity, how heartbreaking that was for me and how quenching, you know, and sort of like smushed down I felt. And I just thought, I have got to do something for people who would never be able to even come here. You know, like I took a day off of work and drove, you know, to the Capitol and spent my time doing that. And there are people, many, many people in my district who could not and would not do that. You know, and so it was kind of like fighting my way for a seat at the table and then just being, you know, like just being ignored. But like, there are so many people who wouldn't even get to the table, you know. And I think that that was so just appalling. Just such the complete antithesis of what government is supposed to be doing. It was almost like a Saturday Night Live skit or like a parody. You know, that's what I have seen in so much of my experience with this since I've been, you know, doing it is some of this stuff is just, it's like a cartoon. It's like you just cannot make this stuff up, that people actually just blatantly have so much disrespect for the honor that they have been given, you know, in the office. I was talking to someone yesterday who had written some postcards, you know, just requesting some common sense, you know, gun legislation help. And, you know, she spent all this time writing those, and she said, but, you know, they're not even going to read them. And I just thought, that is awful, you know, to think that. And obviously, she's still just trying to do her part, you know, and hopeful that somehow it might make a difference. But I just thought, that is pitiful. Like, that is, I do not want that for my kids. I want them to have more faith in their public servants than that. I mean, that's the way, you know, when I go back to Dale Bumpers and thinking of him as our, you know, governor and then our senator for so long, I did sort of have that kind of trust in him, you know, that he would care and he would try to do what was right. He might make mistakes, but, you know, that he was there to serve and that he was interested in what the people had to say and what they needed. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
Thanks to our listeners today for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand. We hope you enjoyed this part A conversation with Gwen Falkenberry of Arkansas Strong. Be sure to check out this and the second part of this conversation on the Other Hand on the Braver Angels Arkansas website, and that's at arkansas.braverangels.org. Thank you to our listeners also for joining us for this edition of On the Other Hand, and encourage you to check out this and future podcast episodes of On the Other Hand on our Braver Angels Arkansas website at arkansas.braverangels.org.
Okay, and we'd also love to hear from our listeners about feedback. What do you like about what we're doing? Any suggestions for improvement? Let us know if you have ideas for other speakers or topics that are consistent with what we're talking about. Just basically whatever you want to share with us. You can email us at otherhandar@gmail.com, and that would also be on the website.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro, Arkansas, and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado's Symphonic Band with Dr. Richard Main as the conductor.
From your host, Glenn White.
And April Chatham Carpenter.
Have a good evening, and let's all work to bring our community closer together.